Time to crack a big cold beer and listen to the Triple M Big Breakfast Catch-Up Podcast for Victoria Bitter, official sponsor of Hard Work. 18 plus.
Hello, welcome back from the weekend. Thanks for streaming us on the Triple M app. You can also subscribe if you just like it. Pushed out to you every single day, and why wouldn't you? You've got a very different take on what happened with the Wallabies on the Gold Coast over the weekend, Marto.
Yeah, a lot of people after the game saw a very large man being picked on by a spectator. I tell you what, I was real close and I had a different take on it.
Yes, indeed. Our resident psychologist, Lawrence Mooney, was back with Dear Moon Man.
Today on Dear Moon Man, Brando, we help a man that mended a marital rift with a pedicure.
Oh, look at him go. And parents who can't cook, yes, they live amongst us, and we heard all your stories.
The Big Breakfast with Marto, Robin and the Moon Man.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you what happened. Saturday evening, it was an interesting time because I know a lot of people would have been watching the Bunnies against the Dragons. So down the Gold Coast, it was there before the game, about an hour, 40 minutes. I was on the field there at Seabus Stadium about 40 minutes before the game, and the All Blacks versus the South Africans, the Springboks, test match was on.
Yep.
Okay, so part of the Rugby Championship, they started at 5:30, and that game had finished, all right, just as we were on the field, and checker went by us, okay? The Australians had come to warm up for their test match against Argentina. And he said, oh, did you see? No, I think I said to him, did you see the All Blacks result? All Blacks have been beaten for they had won 56 out of their last 57 test matches at home. They are the world's greatest sporting team on earth, all right? And they've just been beaten by South Africa. And in Checker's belief, that changes everything because New Zealand were in another planet. Them being beaten means that if they got beaten a couple more times, Australia wins against Argentina. They'd won last week against South Africa. They could have won the Rugby Championship. That was in his mind before Wallaby game.
So we were a chance.
We were a chance. 90 minutes later, no.
We weren't a chance. Did Israel they not Folau, play well?
They played really well. That's the thing. For the first 15 minutes, they were unbelievable. Israel Folau was exceptional. They went to sleep for a while, and then they had a chance in the last 30 seconds. As the full-time hooter sounded, they were on the attack. They were 5 metres out. Israel Folau, who was wonderful all night, all he had to do was pass. From left to right, he doesn't pass real well, but so often he just steps off his right and scores tries. It's easy for him. He makes the impossible look easy. Didn't pass. Some bloke has hammered him, knock on, full time, heads go down. So they were 1 second and 4 metres away from winning that game, and no one would have asked any more questions, okay?
Yeah.
As it was, everyone's heads went down. The Wallabies, heads went down. The Argentinians thought it was their Christmas. They hadn't won a test match here since 1983. So there were some big moments.
Really?
1983, I watched that one at Ballymore where they shoved us. Anyway, so they'd been coming every year.
So 35 years.
Since they'd won a test match in Australia. But they're bloody good. They beat South Africa.
I wonder why they were celebrating so much.
Well, that's exactly right. They beat South Africa 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago. They scored their most ever points ever against New Zealand. So there's the complexity to everything, okay?
Yep.
The Australians are down. The Argentinians are up. The fans are disappointed. They've had to go to that stupid stadium for starters, and they've had to walk away losers. And then,
it gets ugly.
That's where it gets ugly. So I'm watching, I'm looking at the commentary, but I wasn't looking at anything in particular. And our post-match show's on, so we just do the commentary, then we're done. Take the headphones off.
And off you go.
Well, we can whenever we want, but so we're having a chat going, oh, Jesus, that was horrible. Oh, God, what an end. There's going to be trouble now. Wondering about Checker and his position and everything else. And all of a sudden, there's a kerfuffle because our panel, full-time panel, is thrown to Rod Caper, who's doing the on-field interviews. And in behind him, there's a bit of a scuffle in the stand. And you know how quick motion can grab your attention?
Absolutely.
There were a couple of little sharp things thrown. And I looked down, and it was 15 metres below the commentary box to where the Australian reserves are all sitting. And there's this big Luke Antui, who is a kid who went to Ipswich Grammar School. He's an enormous monster, 6'7", he's 125 k's. He's reaching out to grab this bloke who's in a Wallaby fan, jersey. Mm-hmm. And trying to shake him, and people are pushing, and there's a terrible kerfuffle.
News, you could see the guy that was at the centre of it because he had a very shiny, bald head,
and
almost like he'd waxed it, especially for the test match.
And his face was a bit red, etc. He also had on a number 9. Like, he just didn't have a Wallaby jersey. His mum or someone had sewn the number onto it too. So he wasn't just a pretend Wallaby fan. He was ready to replace George Gregan if he was needed.
Ready to go.
They're all said he's full of ink. I went up, I caught up with him later. So if you don't know, what he did was He paid his money for his jersey. Those the jerseys, as we know, cost $170. He paid his money for his ticket. He'd had a few beers. He'd had some food, etc. And he thought that he wanted to go down. Apparently, he said, play with some heart, because he spent his money and he thought that that owed him. And you can. You can yell at players if you want to.
Absolutely, you can.
But
I reckon they're as emotionally involved, the supporter, as the player.
I do too.
More so because they're impotent. You've got no control.
And especially if Wallabies aren't going too well, you're going to have indignant and angry fans, and he was one of them. And the Wallabies encouraged their players to go around and say hello to the fans after the game.
Well, you know, Coach Michael Checker said this about it.
I understand how fans get disappointed. I do. I saw he was there in his Wallaby jersey as well. Like, it's not like he doesn't want us to win. He wants us to win badly, and, you know, sometimes that goes pear-shaped.
And he was yelling, there was about four Wallabies there near the fence because they were near their friends and relatives. And he was pointing at all of them. But it was this Luke Antui, whose stepfather had died on Wednesday. No one knew. This fan didn't know that.
Week.
They had their black armbands on for his
week. He's had a bad week.
He's had a bad week, and his sister got bumped. Now, his sister, I thought, who is that little kid down there? She was about 10 years of age. Aww. The guy, as he was sort of being pulled forward by the Luke Antui, who wanted to belt him, clearly, brushed against Luke Antui's sister. That enraged him more. Then there were blokes involved. It did get ugly, and there was one of the great choke holds by a...
That's the thing that fascinated me. A very large Maori man carried that little bald man off by his neck.
Yes.
Just had just two hands around it, picked him up. His head was glistening. I thought, oh, that's good.
That guy's going to die. All right, so I leave the commentary box, go down to the next level and go, I've got to see where this goes next. Thank God for that guy. The cops finally got there and saved him from the guy who had his hands around choking him. And they were I don't think there's any charges. There's no nothing. You're allowed to yell out at the footy. He didn't make any racist comments. He didn't make any. He just said, you should have played with a bit of heart. So it's all over. Forget the whole thing. That
and
guy's
let that
lucky
poor
to be alive.
Guy gone have a week off and
yeah, he is. He was said he didn't want to play ever again. He'll just have a 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, and he'll be fine with his family.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
It's time for Dear Moon Man, my opportunity to help people, and often the letters from the same person. A woman called Lou seems to write in a lot.
She's got a lot of problems.
And this week is no exception. My name's Lou, and I'm married to a comedian/radio host who's much older than I am. We have two children aged 18 and 5 years of age. Wow. Our 18-year-old is from my husband's previous marriage. Too much info, Lou. Okay, let's get into it, Lou. What's the problem? I'm writing to you because I'm an AFL fan, a Richmond supporter. I'm a member and I'm passionately involved with the club.
I still wear
the number 12 Guernsey I've had since I was 14 years of age. I wear it to every game. I've had it since 1995 when it was signed by Richo, Matthew Richardson, who is number 12 or was number 12, and with whom I'm obsessed.
Okay.
This is quite incredible. Since she was 14.
She's worn the same jersey, jumper to every game.
That's good that she still fits into it.
That's 25 years, yeah. So
that's really good.
Whoever Lou is. This woman has got the body of a 14-year-old girl.
Or she was...
Lucky Lawrence. Anyway,
a big 14-year-old.
My husband, Barry. Yeah, that's right. She's enormous. My husband, Barry Crestenden, and twice a year, we hate each other. Having been to the footy together many times over our 12 years as a couple, this year we decided we'd never do that again for fear it would end our marriage.
Wow.
Richmond flogged Essendon, and he lost his tiny, tiny mind. He went home alone, and when I eventually got home, he demanded I take down the dusty Martin poster that adorned the wall above our bed since the preliminary final last year.
Can Robin and I just discuss that? Have you got what that means? Yeah, the dusty Martin's one with all the tattoos.
I know exactly what that means.
Above the bed.
I know. This is a whole other world that is slightly foreign to most of us.
Let's say that she occasionally faces Mecca.
Okay, great. Lucky Lou.
Okay.
Last year, my husband organised the post-grand final dinner for 14 people so we could all celebrate together. He bought me a souvenir Tigers watch and a celebratory work of art. The most supportive non-Richmond husband ever, but I feared all that was lost after our footy fallout.
Oh, dear.
Then on the weekend, he came with me and my daughter Maggie to get a pedicure. He loves pedicures. Pedicures, for the uninitiated, are a delightful foot treatment where the foot is soaked, massaged, dead skin is shaved away, nails are trimmed and painted. So when it came time to select and nail polish, I decided on yellow and black toenails because it's finals time. Then my husband said to the girls doing the pedicure, I'll do the same.
Oh, wow.
Yellow and black toenails for me. And he's actually sent a photo in. Yes, this means that he's actually...
Oh, funny.
Okay, so there are two yellow toenails. They're the ones just after the pinky and all the rest are black.
That's right, because Richmond are a yellow sash across a black jumper.
Yeah. So, why wouldn't you have replicated, or this bloke have replicated, how come it's on your phone? But anyway, how come he wouldn't have replicated the tattoos on Dusty Martin's arms?
Well, sometimes he paints tattoos onto his neck to replicate
Dusty Martin. What, like a Reed impersonator?
Yeah, he does a little bit of role-playing at home, puts a rug on his head and wears a number four Guernsey. That's a letter for another time.
Yeah.
His decision to get his nails painted sent the girls who were doing our nails into fits of giggles. Men obviously don't wear nail polish in Vietnam or anywhere else in the world.
It's true.
For me, it was a sign that my man's right behind me again for the final series.
Oh.
So what should I do? Advice? Yeah.
What should do? Be happy.
I reckon he's a bit of a Finocchio. You should leave him.
Get ready. Big Breakfast, Triple M.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast, weekday mornings from 5:30.
Hey, here's a boring story. Let me tell you this. So I came back from the coast yesterday with Kath after I was there Saturday night, got home to Brizzy, and we went, you know what, we should do our shopping, our grocery shopping, and then it's done for the day, then we don't have to go out again.
Awesome.
Yep.
Good idea.
It was 9:04. I said, Kath, wonder what time it opens. She said, oh, no, it opens early. I said, it's a Sunday, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, they do.
No, how embarrassing to be there but who were the people? Who were the 40 people in there before me? 40 people on a Sunday morning were already standing with their trolleys ready to open the doors at 9 a.m.
Well, they were people who were packing their day.
All right, so I wasn't so embarrassed because I didn't get out of the car until it was 9:01.
Oh, right, because everyone would have cared.
All right, so I went in there. Then I started talking to Kath and I said, this is unbelievable, because I said, what time? It opens at 9, finishes at 6. You got so much access to shopping these days, correct?
You do.
Do you remember the old days with I was talking to Kath about Thursday night shopping. When that first came in, it changed, it revolutionised
the world.
Do you
remember Saturday mornings? We used to have to, because I'd have ballet classes in the morning, and my ballet classes finished at 11:30, and yes, I can still do the 7 different positions with my feet.
Number 2, please.
Yeah, right, just doing it. so we used to have to race from ballet, which was over one side of town, and get to the supermarket before 11:45, because they would put people out the front and not allow you to come in unless you were in by 11:45 and they shut at 12.
I remember Saturday mornings. Yeah. It was Mum would give Dad a list for the butcher shop. Got to get up there so you get the best cuts of meat.
Because it wasn't open on Saturday afternoon. Nothing was open on Sundays.
That's it.
Was that the 70s when Thursday night shopping came in? Everyone went, wow, what a revolution. Yes. You can actually go shopping at night time.
Amazing.
All right. I thought back to that. And then I said to Kath, you know what? Because she said, we're just talking. And she said, oh, what do we do for dinner? Ended up. Nice little roast lamb yesterday afternoon.
Yum.
I cooked it. And that's when we started talking. I went, you know what? My father never went shopping and never cooked anything except for Mum got a job at Myers, Chermside, while we were still at school. So he cooked once on a Thursday night, stuffed it up, and then Mum just had to make every Thursday night we had spaghetti meatballs when she went to work. My father could not cook anything. Zero. Nothing.
My father never stood up at the stove, and if he had to, if he was left instructions to cook, it was just mind-boggling watching him look at the instructions, look back at the fry pan, look at the instructions, just a man way out of his depth.
What was wrong with these men? Is there still anyone existing? 133353, is there still, I'm saying, man, maybe there's some females who can't
cook. No, I'm not a great cook. My whole childhood, I can get away with it, but I didn't learn till my 20s because my sister had an eating disorder right through my teenage years, and she would not allow any of us.
From your cooking?
Some would say that later.
Yeah.
But she would not allow anyone else in the kitchen. She had to control all the food. So I never learnt to cook until I was in my 20s.
Wow, that was a banning.
Yeah, so if you ask my children, they would rather have anyone else's cooking other than mine. Oh. Aaron of Caloundra. Your dad, how was he?
He was shocking.
What'd he do?
He could cook 3 things really well. Everything else was terrible.
Give us
his
top.
He could do spaghetti bolognese, fried rice, and roast chicken, but only if you get one of those roasting bags.
Well, he couldn't work out how to do it on his own.
Well, he just burned the chicken otherwise.
Huh. Right, fried rice has got a number of elements to it. Like, what was in his fried rice?
It was pretty basic. It was bacon, onion, and...
Bit of egg?
A little bit, but it was always really rubbery, but it was, you could eat it, but it wasn't great.
Aaron, I like
onion
you.
Onion in fried rice, no thanks.
Well, didn't we ask for parents who couldn't cook anything? Your father's quite capable, as far as I'm concerned.
He is.
He's a regular Jamie Oliver, your dad.
Just to make Moon feel better, did he say I love you at all?
Yeah. He does now, not when I was a kid. I never really heard that I was proud of him.
Okay. Wow. That's a whole other conversation, I think. Lindy of Newtown.
Hello.
Hi. What about your dad? Oh, your husband.
My husband, he is so bad. All he can do is a toasted sandwich.
What's wrong with that?
No, that's bad. When I first met him, his barbecue colour was black. Just black.
Yep.
Lindy, why don't you make him do some stuff?
Yeah, toasted sandwich. He couldn't do that either. Now we can make a toasted sandwich.
Have you got kids?
So progress.
We've got a graph that's showing some improvement. Have you got kids?
Not with this husband.
How many have you had, Lindy?
I can't even scramble an egg.
It's my third. Third time lucky.
Yeah.
He loves me.
Have any of them been able to cook, Lindy?
No, well, bloody hopeless. Well, excuse me, I'm not supposed to swear.
That must be you're a good cook then, Lindy, that they don't need to feel the need to learn.
Well, I suppose most people do say that, but look, you know, I'm over it now.
Hey, Lindy, very quickly, can we send Lindy to Bon Jovi?
Yes, bloody of course we can.
All right, we'll ask you're off to Bon Jovi.
I love you to laugh, Lindy.
This house is not...
Amazing. Thank you so much. And Robin, I just love you to bits. Just keep up the great work.
Look at you go, Lindy. Thank you.
Good on you, Lindy. This house is not for sale. Tour Triple M Cusack, tickettech.com.au for tickets.
She gone?
Yeah, she's gone.
Lindy's like my dad. She never told me she loved me either. Just
She'd be an undie chucker, Lindy, at Bon Jovi.
Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah, she'll have the potato strainers off.
Stop
for
it.
Sure.
Nick, she was being so nice to her. Leave her alone. Nick of Sunny Coast. Hello.
Hello. Good morning to you all.
Who is it that can't cook, Nick?
Well, it wasn't a parent, although my dad couldn't cook to save toffee, but it was a mature student that we had from Papua New Guinea called Colin.
Yes.
Was his name Colin?
Colin.
He decided
to boil an egg, but he put it in a microwave in a metal saucepan.
Oh, jeez. Sparks.
Colin.
And I smelled this burning, and I was like, what the hell is that? And
what's Colin doing?
Colin.
Good old Colin.
Can we just check? His name wasn't really Colin. He said a really long name, and you said, can we just call you Colin? Yeah. And he agreed.
No, it was Colin.
Colin.
He had everything done for him in Papua New Guinea, so he couldn't do anything. I mean, he was a lovely bloke, but, yeah, he couldn't cook.
Right. Did he damage the microwave? Did it all,
Yeah, it arced out the handle as it turned round. Obviously, it came to a stop, and it arced out on the microwave.
Okay.
Nearly burned the house down.
Colin had never seen a microwave, had he?
Colin, you idiot.
Colin, get away from the microwave, Colin.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
I'm a puerile and childish man. I think that goes without saying. There's a Year 10 student locked inside of me. That's where I stopped developing emotionally. And so I was thrilled with the news that New South Wales Racing had suspended Stuart Roos, the managing owner of a horse, for 18 months for giving it a naughty name. And so it's like, well, what is the naughty name? Now, he gave it an Italian name. The first part of that is Andiamo. Now, Andiamo in Italian means let's go. The second part of that Italian name is a very rude word. So the name translates to let's go, insert naughtiest C word you can say.
Oh.
Let's go!
Which we're not going to say.
No.
No, we're just going to leave that and everyone else can join in at home. Yes. Let's go!
In Italian.
So, it did run. It was commentated. And I think probably some Italian people might have got on the phone and said, do you know what you're saying there? Because it's non bene. I think a lot of people think of, you know, maybe if they're going to get a racehorse, what they're going to call it. In fact, we have talked about calling our big breakfast racehorse Munter. haven't we?
And well, I reckon
here
we
comes here comes
that.
Munter, which is a legal name, but would be hilarious.
It would be.
If Munter was successful and they were putting it up there with black caviar and wings, it'd be thrilling. Munter has won its last 18 starts.
Have you heard of this one? Back a few years ago, there was a horse, and now it's Lebanese. It's rooted in Lebanese. I can't
say
it, can I?
No, absolutely you can't. Not. But what does it translate to?
F you.
Okay.
And it was in Lebanese. It won a race in Toowoomba, and all these people who knew Lebanese
were very offended.
They were laughing.
Yeah, they were on it.
Toowoomba Turf Club. They definitely would have been on it. Imagine seeing that in the paper.
See, F you. I like the clever ones. I like the ones that make Lee laugh. Like, I just Googled Great British Racing horses' names.
They're not as tied over in Britain as we are. Australians really tight with dirty names.
Well, okay. Some of these, but you know, things like hoof-hearted, passing wind.
Right.
Hold on, they're more puns rather than there's no filth there.
Funny. What about may the horse be with you?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
good. Clever.
And that's why that Waikikamoo cow, the one from New Zealand, that was always a great name.
Waikikamoo cow. I do like a clever name or a pun name, play on words, but some of the naughty names. Greg, you were, my man Greg, I'm getting all formal. Marta, you were saying you'd read some from the US. Are we able to read any of those out?
Not a lot of them.
Okay, so none of them.
No. There was the magic carpet burns. Like, that's not rude, is it?
No.
No, that's a magic carpet. And I've got some burns. You
know, they're not easy to ride, are they, magic carpet?
You're going to hang on tight. This,
we're all thinking about what we can and can't say here.
What we suggest you do is Google...
Wrong horse names because there's some hilarious
ones.
Don't
have to be right. You can get political. What about ScoMo? Get the horse ScoMo, Au Pair Affair, Leadership Spill.
Have these things started? Are you saying they're already horse names?
I'm saying getting it started.
How about this one? This is a country horse that is actually legitimate. Caught with your sister.
Wow. Yeah. Tasmania.
Straight out of Tassie.
Running out of Tassie.
The Big Breakfast with Marto, Robin and the Moon Man.
Me and George Costanza are both king of the idiots.
Oh, no. What have you done?
Well, as you know, last Thursday night, coming home from a performance, left my phone in the cab again. It's a black cover on a black phone. Put it down, hard to see. Maybe wind assisted with a few sherbets.
Anyway,
lost the phone.
What happened on Friday morning when you found somebody told you what you could do?
Well, I went to the iCloud because I'm stuck in the Apple cult, and I hit find my phone, and it zeroed in onto a house in Currabee. So we kept an eye on that after the show. I got in my car.
Hold on. What did we assume? This is the last time I haven't spoken to you about this. Okay, so we assumed it was the cabbie's address, and he was probably having a snooze.
Absolutely. I'd rung the cab company. I'd spoke to their lost property department. I'd reported it. I had a reference number. They then put a call out to all cab drivers and wait for someone to get back to them. Now, that cabbie had obviously finished his shift. He'd gone to bed. Somebody else would then be in that car. Cabs never sit idle at all. Mm-hmm. So you presume he would be at home, my phone on his kitchen table or his bedside table.
But sometimes, you know, the problem is, Moon, when I've seen before, he may hand in the cab at 3:30 on Friday morning and another driver goes out and the phone's still on the back seat.
But then the cab, that would then show that the phone was travelling around. But this was fixed throughout the show, and so I decided to drive out there.
You're earthing away.
So I drove out there and thought, well, I'll pound on the door. If the guy gets up, I offer a reward.
Sleeping cab, you were ready to offer a reward.
You're going into a foreign house with a person that you think is the cabbie because the phone's in there, but the phone could have been picked up by any random in the back of the cab. You don't know.
That's true.
What world you're entering into, and you stand there and pound at the door?
Did you knock or pound? You didn't pound.
Well, what happened was I drove out there and I knocked on a neighbour's door. I knocked on a door and somebody answered. And I said, excuse me, are you a cab driver or are there cab drivers? And he goes, no, next door is where the cab drivers live.
Oh, hold on. Drivers. So your GPS marker was showing the house next door.
No, the GPS marker showed an approximate maybe one of three houses.
Righto.
So I had to do a door knock. So I knock on the first door and the guy says, no, the cab drivers live next door.
So it's an enclave of cabbies.
Yeah, so
all
I go
together.
In.
What?
The first thing I notice is that there's bars on the window on the inside. So I look through the window.
Stop. What does that mean?
That means, you know, normally if you put bars on a window.
Put them on the outside.
You're on the outside, but they're on the inside. I think it's added security. No, maybe. So I look through the window. I peer through the window. In the lounge room, there's mattresses. There's prayer mats. There's hookah pipes or shisha pipes. Mm. And so there's a few people live here and there's a few people sleeping here.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark inside. The front doorstep. And I'm not judging Muslims or people of any faith here.
Like
I'm just gone into an immersion into a different culture. The front doorstep has 8 pairs of sandals on it, okay? Yep. So there's a few blokes living here. So I think, all right, well, I reckon he's in there. So I go zero.
Your phone is in there. That's what
my phone
for.
Is in there and the cab driver, but I need someone to answer the door. So it's a little bit zero, dark 30.
Yeah.
Obama. And so I start knocking on the door. There's no movement inside. I go back to the window to see whether anyone's scuttling
about. See,
that's
freaky as well when people start looking through your window, but continue.
So then I really start knocking on the door, like trying to wake somebody up.
Like you're the cops. Mm.
Like I'm the cops.
Pounding. Yeah.
Now, next thing that happens is that a cab arrives in the driveway. And so the cab driver, and I think, oh, one of the cab drivers is back. So I go over to the car and I said, do you live here? And he says, no, I don't live here. And let's go generic cab driver accent. All right. And I said, he goes, my friend's here. And I said, oh, great. Are you here to visit your friend? He goes, no, I'm not here to visit my friend. And so I just said automatically, I said, so what are you doing here? And he goes, I've come to see my friend. And I said, oh, well, okay, can I come inside with you? Because my phone's inside. And he said, no, I'm not going inside. And then it dawned on me why he was there. Because someone inside had called him to say, can you come around and see who's pounding on the door?
Of course.
You are in a whole world of potential
somebody
pain.
Yeah, of course, these guys, what's their number one rule, this household? No one ever answers the door.
Yes.
Okay, so he has rung up and he's gone, can you come around and see who's knocking on our door? Because is it the cops? Is it Roman Quaveley and
so
Peter Dutton? Who is it?
That is so dangerous. So did you get your phone back? What happened?
So surely that guy in the driveway, the new cabbie that's rolled along, he said, this is, you sure you're not a cop? Did he ask you that?
No, he said, I said, my phone's in there. He goes, no, it's, how do you know? I said, and I held up my computer. I was carrying my computer.
Oh,
I go,
you nerd. What a nerd. Pounding at a door with a laptop under your other wing.
Anyway, he said, you've got to call the cab company. That's who will get your phone back to you. And he wasn't moving. I said, and you're sure you're not going inside? He goes, I'm not going inside. So anyway, I had a rehearsal to get to, drove off, and thought to myself,
what
the hell was I doing?
What happened was
I kept watching the computer all day, and about 4 o'clock that afternoon, the phone starts moving, and it goes into town.
He's back at work.
And I ring the phone, he picks it up and he goes, hello. And I said, there's $100 in it for you if you come to this address now. Bang. Came around.
You didn't meet him
took
at your
the
house, did you?
Gave me, no, just a generic street address and got my phone back.
Oh,
but
my
man,
God.
That is so weird.
There is a different world happening out there, my friends, a very different world.
It's quite a mission to go on to get your phone back.
Oh, a lot of people have done it. Every Monday when you'd hop in a taxi, the screen would be full of stuff that people, drunken people, had left in the cab.
Well, let's see.
And they'd be looking for it.
What lengths have you gone to get your phone back?
That's a good question.
Tony Afanvale, what happened?
Well, I once left my phone in the back of a cab in New York City.
Whoa.
And fortunately for me at the time, I didn't put a passcode on it, and the next passenger who found it was so kind as to try to find me, and she went through the phone and she found the contact for my mother, and by that time I put a block on the phone, so she tried to call my mum but she couldn't, so she went the next step and then emailed the email address for my mother and let her know that she had my phone. My mum was able to contact me at the hotel, and I was able to go and pick up my phone at the lady's workplace the next day.
Reward?
Nice.
Wow. No reward. I tried to offer her one, but she wouldn't accept.
Oh, good one.
What a nice person. That is very unexpected anywhere in the world, but particularly in New York, I would have thought.
Absolutely.
Can I just check, what would happen these days? Like, cabs is all right because you can ring them and they can check and do whatever they can. Uber, if you've lost your... leave your phone in an Uber.
Yeah.
And let's say they drop you at an address. Do they know your home address?
Depends sometimes. Who they pick
you
up
from.
But
you've got to contact them and then they put you in contact with the driver and it's about you and the driver negotiating
a time. So it's easier for Uber to find your phone, perhaps.
I think it's possibly easier.
Right. Adam from Norman Park, did you ever re-track your phone down?
Yeah, I was a similar sort of thing. I was overseas and dropped my phone at a bus station and jumped on one of those buses you can jump on and off. Mm-hmm. And I've realised probably 2 or 3 k's down the road.
Oh.
So I jumped off the moving bus, sprinted back, and got back there to seeing someone playing with my phone and said, "Can I have a phone, thanks?" And she looked at me and I'm denied and going, "Oh," grabbed it, ripped it off her and jumped on the next bus and kept going.
Oh. Wow.
So you don't even ripped know if it. She was going to keep it or not. And why would you go, "Oh"? No,
the way she was looking at it, she was definitely... stuffing out what she was
going to
do with it. She wasn't giving it back.
Oh,
but you stole
checking,
it.
Checking your search history. What sort of guy was he?
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
If you are passionate about our city, then listen up to this. We have a major city problem.
Paris has one. The French gifted one to New York. And London, well, where do you start? Brisbane needs an iconic landmark too.
Brisbane's got nothing to really put on our postcard and our website and really sell us as a genuine world city.
He says the wave of interstate migrants relocating to Queensland are favouring the Gold and Sunshine Coasts, and that Brisbane's missing out on international tourists too.
There isn't enough that's really big and bold to attract people. We've become boring.
Okay, so let us all digest that.
Good. You can have all these new people. Have them down the coast and up the coast.
No, we need them here. We need them for our restaurants. We need them for South Bank.
Yeah, but what, that argument doesn't hold water because there's no landmark at the Gold Coast or the Sunshine Coast.
Or the beach.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms
kind of
big,
why do
big,
we need one?
Big Ben, Eiffel Tower, Statue
Opera
of Liberty,
House.
Opera House. Well, the Story Bridge, come
well,
on.
Let us.
I think it's a beautiful and iconic representation of Brisbane.
And
good
so
one, thank
does
you, mate.
Our Lord Mayor.
Oh.
City Hall itself, I think, is one of those. So you've got the Story Bridge as another. But it's more about, I think, the attractions that we need here.
Yeah, no.
Attraction.
No one is coming to look at the Story Bridge,
people. Can we
people?
Look at it logically, please?
Yes.
If you come here, if you're an overseas tourist, are we only talking about people who want to live here or tourists as well?
Both.
All
what
right.
Is our
how long
city
do you stay
known
here?
For?
What is the city known for? South Bank. If you're a tourist, you go to probably go to take your friends up to Summit, up to the restaurant, yeah. Up to the lookout at Mount Coota, and you're taken to South Bank, and tourists on their own go to South Bank. Oh. I'll watch them every day.
Melbourne's
come and go from Roma
got a
Street.
South Bank. Like, it's South Bank's not enough.
But they don't have a South Bank with a swimming pool, and that's what the tourists want to come take their clothes off, and then the next day they'll go to the Gold Coast or they'll start heading to Cairns.
So you reckon if someone was arriving in Brisbane from down south...
There's only two days, one night in Brisbane.
Okay, and you'd take them to up to Mount Coota to dine in a restaurant?
Yeah, there's Brisbane.
Because I've been here since January. Mm-hmm. No one's taken me up to
well,
Mount Coota.
You seen Stephen's Needle, anyone?
Stephen's Needle. Hello. Well, this is what if.
All right,
this is what the accommodation people, what if, suggested we should do.
A big ibis for Brisbane is in the running for what if's next big thing competition. They'll even pay for the big bin chicken and gift it to council if it wins.
What if are saying that?
Do you know
what?
Big ibis.
Oh, yeah, they and have the big bin chicken on one side of the river and on the other side the massive tip rat. You know?
That was the Triple M Big Breakfast Catch-Up Podcast for Victoria Bitter, official sponsor of Hard Work. You could win a brand new hardworking 4x4 just by drinking Victoria Bitter. Full T's and C's and permits apply at vb.com.au/winner4x4. 18 plus.
It's the end of the podcast. What do you know? So tune in tomorrow and catch the show.
Triple M.